Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello, everybody.
Watcher.
We're back.
We are.
Another week.
Another week.
Games have been played.
Yeah, they have indeed.
I've played a lot of games.
There's been a bank holiday and all sorts.
Oh, there was, wasn't
there? Yeah. Of course, every day is a bank holiday for me at the moment, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about games.
Let's talk about games then.
Let's talk about games. I'm going to talk about PlanetSide 2, because it's the one I'm playing quite a lot of, and that's what I talk about.
I've got that game installed.
Have you?
Yes.
You're one step closer to joining in the hijinks and fun in Five Rounds Rapid.
I am indeed. I'm just...
You should totally come along one night.
I'm still trying to get my password reset from SOE.
The old station pass problem.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've written Rainbow Max there. We've all gone a bit mad with the rainbow shoulder decals. I don't know who started it, but suddenly it seems to be the cool thing to have. Given the normal Vanum Sovereignty camouflage, which is a kind of very vivid purple, which doesn't blend in with any natural terrain or unnatural terrain, really. So we've decided to go the whole hog and put rainbows on our shoulders as well. And then add to that the pink glowy lightning super mode for the maxes. And strangely, some people are questioning our sexuality on Zone Chat, which I just can't work out why. What's that all about?
Yes, that's not politically correct of them.
I know. We've been doing lots of cool stuff with the maxes, though. I've just been having all sorts of fun with the Zoe mode. We've been sort of worrying about an incoming nerf, and apparently they are going to get a bit of a tweak, but more clued up people than me who actually pay attention to these things have done some research, and it looks like the Zoe Max mode is getting its strafe speed nerfed a bit. Because while it's on, you get a run movement bonus, but apparently the side-to-side thing was a bit too much or something. That'll make it a little less easy for us to smash AD, AD, AD repeatedly and lag out the network code, but in maxes while the thing's active. To be honest, I don't have the wits to dodge sideways out of the way of incoming shots anyway, so this shouldn't interrupt my play at all. I think the rest of it's staying the same, though, the damage bonus and everything. I mean, quite a lot of Vanus have sunk quite a lot of points into it by now because it is quite an effective solution to many of our previous problems. I've been getting kill streaks and all sorts with them. It's crazy. I've been taking out tanks on distant hilltops as well. I got the Comet arm, the second anti-vehicular arm for the Max. That's 250 certs to unlock on that character. Or 500 station cash, which seems quite a lot. 250 certs, not too bad at all. I mean, even without the double bonus weekend, which has now gone away, it's, you know, you can get that over a week or so if you're chipping away at it all. I mean, you get about 24 certs a night just for logging in, because they've given pretty much everyone a sort of ongoing trial version of the copper membership, which doubles your XP.
Yeah,
and that's going to hurt when they take that away from us again, but I don't mind. But yes, I've got both Comet arms on the max, and in the super lightning bonus round mode, you can actually do significant damage to ground vehicles with it if they don't see you. And of course, you're a bit more agile. You can hide in a building, pop out, shoot a few. It's good if you've got nearby tanks camping on hilltops. They have to move or they're going to die. So that stops them farming your guys with impunity. It's quite good. I've written Galaxy Swarm there. We had it was
not like Galaxy Quest.
No, very much. It's very much a different thing. We were at the warp gate, and we all sort of come back from a tour of duty, ready to head on out for the next one. And my galaxy was still intact. I'm becoming quite an accomplished galaxy pilot now. We do aerial pickups as well. This is where I hover about 10 meters off the ground and gradually lower myself. And the trick is not to squash the troops underneath, but if they jump up enough and push E at the right moment, they can leap into an air galaxy
that like
without landing.
That moment? In
like in every Vietnam film you've ever seen, when they have to all jump in the chopper and get the hell out.
I was thinking of that Star Trek film where Data remotely pilots a shuttle off a cliff, and then Picard drives the stupid vehicle with wheels. Why do they have a car with wheels off the cliff and into the shuttle?
I don't know. I have to try that. I'll see if I can catch a Harrisser on the roof and take it somewhere. Apparently, if we've done some science, if you're standing on the top of a galaxy on the upper surface and it goes up, it will kill you. You don't move with it, which is a shame. But if it stays still, you can stand on it quite happily, unimpeded. We need to do more crazy aerobatic stunts with the galaxy. I love my galaxy.
If you got the guy on the roof to jump as you move up,
yeah,
you could probably actually get some rice.
What I really want to try is dropping from a galaxy onto another galaxy and have everyone push E at the right moment and jump into it. And it's a kind of air-to-air transfer. That's going to be my big... I haven't mentioned this to Five Rounds Rapid yet. I might try that one night when they're all there and not tell anyone or something. Right, everybody out, and then have someone else in another galaxy underneath, and we'll see if we can do an aerial swap. That would be awesome. So we all turned up at the warp gate, and one of the huge Zerg outfits on the server decided to everyone get a galaxy and we'll all go somewhere and do a thing, and I have no idea what the plan was, but we happened to be there, so I said, yes, let's all get a galaxies as well, and we'll follow along. And it was fantastic. There must have been about 50 or so galaxies all flying in a very ragged loose formation to a destination that very few of us knew what was. So I don't really know what their plan was at that point. This was during an event as well, during one of the alerts. And we all—I don't know—they all just took off, and so I think, all right, everyone up, everyone follow them. And most of our lot managed to fly in a straight line towards the target. That was quite good.
That doesn't sound like them.
And I'm not sure really what they expected to do when they got there, because it wasn't even a connected zone. We couldn't hack it. It was a tech plant where the NC and the TR were going at it, and suddenly like 50 galaxies appear on the horizon, and there was like one guy on the upper deck anti-air gun, and he must have thought it was Christmas. It was fantastic. He got about 4 galaxies, a million XP or something, and there was just galaxies ramming into stuff all over the place and being shot down by a very hungry pack of Reavers and Mosquitoes for them it was a lot, like in Christmas truce in World War One, where they come out and play football.
Yes,
it was like that. They put aside their differences to merrily farm the incoming Vanuva galaxies. It was so stupid. But, you know, a lot of people don't have any real use for their air resources. They don't really fly around much at all. So, good stuff. It's still going on. We're getting about sort of 8 to 10 people a night turning up on our organised nights. And we are actually doing stuff, going places, making a difference, getting in some quite high hefty fights with some quite organised people and doing not too badly. So it's all quite satisfying. So that's Planetside 2. What are you looking at there?
This
very,
is
very rudely surfing while I'm talking.
No, I'm just setting up for my next segment.
Go on then.
This is GeoGuessr.
Do your next segment
this
then.
This is GeoGuessr, a game that I've been playing.
All right, what's that?
It's Google Street View.
Mm-hmm.
The game puts you in a Google Street View at a random place on the planet.
You
have to guess where you are.
Right.
And indicate on the map where you think you are, and you get points for being accurate.
Okay.
So here you are. I've started up here, and we've got this nice little...
We're on some sort of very poorly maintained highway with, what's that, pampas grass around? I'm thinking South America somewhere, probably, but hard to tell from the sky and the trees. The double yellow line in the middle of the road, that's certainly not Britain.
Pothole, so it could be Britain. sign.
Oh, signs is cheating, surely. I don't know. I've literally no idea. Are you allowed to move around until you find a landmark or something? All right. Brazil. That's an address for Brazil, by the looks of it.
So we go to Brazil. Unfortunately, Brazil's quite large.
Yes. I can see the problem with this game. Do you do well at it, generally, when placed on a random point on the planet?
I have done it. I'm going to guess it's around there.
Make guess.
Oh, I was 783 kilometres away.
That's not bad. You got the right country, at least.
Yeah. Yes, and that's basically what you do. And then here we've got another one.
I think I get the idea, yeah.
Yeah. And it's strangely compelling.
But are you allowed to move around?
Yeah, you can move around as much as you want, but you've got to guess where you started.
Okay. And well, you can look for road signs and things like that.
URLs on adverts, those are really useful.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I like it. I score usually quite badly. I annoyingly showed it to my mum during the week, and she got 5K away from the point on her first guess.
Wow, excellent.
Admittedly, it was somewhere she had been.
What are the odds of that happening?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Also, it was Chinese and Portuguese, so it narrows it down to really one place.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it is a brilliant game, and I really like it, and I encourage everyone to go along and waste a day playing it. That's right, GeoGuessr without an E at the end.
Okay, GeoGuessr.com. Excellent.
Are
you going to talk about Star Trek Online then? Yes, the legacy of Romulus is well and truly in there now. There's been a lot of up and down servers and maintenances and so on, and it's a little bit buggy, but on the whole, seems to work. We've been getting our Romulon. That's a joke I stole from Hung Donkey Man, by the way. Sorry. Yes, we created a whole bunch of new Romulan people. I really like the intro, the start of Romulan bit there.
The start of Romulan bit, hypothetically, I would say, is probably quite good.
Oh, here we go. What's your problem with it?
No, I quite like it. trying to hide the fact that I'm not actually playing the game.
If you were to be playing MMOs at all, yeah. No, it's really good. It's got quite a good, strong story. There's a new alien race we haven't heard of who've turned up on the scene, and then there's the Tal Shiar doing their stuff, and it's quite interesting stuff. I've been following. Basically, it's a sort of series of missions that gradually lead you. Well, I don't want to spoiler it too much, but they gradually get you set up, and I think it's like a sort of miniature episode chain for the first 10 levels or so. I don't know, I've only got to about level 10 myself and not got quite far in. It's not too much of a spoiler to say that you during this campaign you will have to, as a Romulan, you need to pick a side. You have to side with the Federation or the KDF as you're going up.
So they're not making it three-way PvP.
It doesn't seem. Yeah, I think it's a sort of new race, new loads of ships for them, fair bit of new content. But I don't believe there's any kind of sort of Romulan homeworld and then a third side for PvP or separate queues for strike forces or anything like that. So I suppose it's a compromise in a way, because I imagine it would have been a colossal amount of work to retool all of the sort of upper end PvP and other bits and pieces. And to be honest, PvP's not huge in that game as it is. But so yeah, you don't get to be a Romulan Empire of your own, but it does mean that if you're starting a new Romulan character, you can still go off and join up with your existing main character's guild or whatever.
That's good. I'll have fleet. To do that at some point.
Yeah, because obviously you can have fleets on the KDF side or the Federation side, but there isn't a sort of you're not going to be hidden away in a separate third side if you're a Romulan.
Talking of the fleet,
yes,
I see it's undergone a change in brand.
I wouldn't know anything about that. We had an informal chat on Mumble and decided that the Itty Bitty Borg Committee, with a H at the end, was perhaps a little bit embarrassing. So we've changed it to Five Rounds Romulan instead, which is perhaps not quite it's a little less embarrassing, certainly. So I don't know.
So you went for a Doctor Who reference, and what happened shortly afterwards?
I don't know. I've sort of been mostly... things. I've been playing Star Trek Online for quite a lot on and off over the last sort of year or two, but mostly I've been pottering around solo with my KDF character, and I'm not in a fleet or anything there. It's just a little pick-away-at side game when I'm not playing whatever main MMO I'm doing. But I sort of log into the Federation character occasionally and have a look at the fleet status and the colossal grinding that's required for the Starbase upgrades and so on. It's a lot of work there. And also... it requires a lot of refined dilithium, which people mostly will be wanting to keep and exchange for Zen points to buy all the gubbins that they don't get because they're free-to-play player. So this refined dilithium does essentially have a sort of real cash value. You can't cash it out, but you will earn it in-game instead of having to pay them money. So asking for such huge quantities of the stuff to upgrade bits for your guild house is a bit of an ask, really. It's a bit of a commitment. This is things you could quite happily find any number of other powerful and useful things for your own personal self to buy with, even if you don't cash it out for Zen points. There's a lot of the very high-end gear that you can only get with the dilithium stuff. So that seems to be the stalling point on a lot of our Starbase projects. Mind you, I don't know who's been responsible. I haven't really been paying much attention, but there's been a couple of people in our fleet who've been doing a lot of hard work for the Starbase upgrades already, so that's good. I've been trying to chip in a bit with my Federation character lately. Seems a bit of a renewed interest in it, obviously, you know, the new expansion and everything.
Expansion did what it's meant to do, then.
Yeah, people coming back, people having a look around, so I guess some of these vast Starbase tasks will be being chipped at away again. I imagine when my Romulan gets to that point, I'll probably choose Federation and rejoin the fleet with that one as well and chip in again more there. We've been getting a little bit of a static group thing going on the Tuesdays. It's a hard game to static group. It is. I mean, you've got it's very good with the level mentoring up and down, as long as you don't sort of get too far away from each other and then it'll suddenly start spawning whatever level monsters the highest level person's got. But it's that whole... I think Planet Side 2 spoiled me a bit. You got theoretical maximum group size in there of 48 players. There's no real classes that you can't change to at an equipment terminal, and you're all on the same faction anyway. There's no levels involved. There's battle ranks, but they don't mean anything in terms of gameplay. So coming back to a normal MMO for static group stuff is going to be hard for me.
Planet side effect. I think it's the fact that it just is really bad for it. We've tried it before, and we have really given it a go.
Yeah, and also I think sort of casting around amongst the regulars on Mumble, quite a few people just don't really like Star Trek Online, so it's going to be a reasonably limited take up. But there's going to be people in there. We're probably going to be you know, trying to work through the Romulan stuff, and then I don't know what we'll do. I haven't really worked out what the plan is for where we're going with it all group-wise. I mean, there's lots of strike forces and task forces, you know, sort of little 20-minute instances you can do as a group and that kind of thing. So those sorts of things will probably be the bread and butter of it all, I expect. But we can be helping each other out on missions. It does seem to scale, the early Romulan missions, if you bring four friends all of a sudden. It does seem to spawn more stuff, make it bigger, make it more hard work. Yeah. I think it can work with groups, so you've got to be a bit persistent and a bit patient with it all. Let's see, I've written Secrets of Nimbus there. That's a new thing. There's a whole new set of missions and a new planet and everything they added with the expansion.
I went there today.
This is just for everyone. This isn't necessarily anything to do with starting new Romulan characters. Existing characters can go and have a look. You'll probably be given a mission to go and investigate the place. Good place. I like it. It's a desert planet. I don't think we've seen another proper good desert planet in this game yet. There's a lot of chicanery going on with the Orion Syndicate and some Thaleron triggers, whatever they are, some sort of weapon of mass destruction that have gone missing. So you need to go off and explore this. It's very Tatooine, isn't it? Have you seen the place?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a wretched hive of scum and villainy made mostly out of sandstone and lots of criminals hanging around in the place. And there's a big old desert zone. It's a sort of part chained mission thing, but also part adventure playground planet, which they do seem to be doing a lot of these days. It seems to be the way they're moving forward, and it's good because it gives you that MMO feel. It's not all tucked away in instances. This is somewhere you can go where there are other people doing stuff, and every so often it'll spawn up some sort of little public questy type of everyone pitch in and help with this sudden thing type stuff going on. There's a whole set of repeatable small missions in there for Dilithium as well. There's one mission there where you've got to do dance emotes, and if you do it enough times you can earn a new dance.
Joy.
I thought that would get your attention, yeah.
Would knock it, but it actually is relevant and based sort of in canon for that.
Is this based on a real Star Trek thing?
Yes, it's Nimbus, which was the planet of intergalactic peace in Star Trek 3.
Right.
And, of course, Uhura does a dance in that to distract the guards.
Right, there we go. It's
really annoying.
I wish I knew Star Trek as well as I know Lord of the Rings, because I'd probably appreciate STO a lot as much as I do.
So it's in the main town, isn't it, Paradise City?
Yes. Yeah. Paradise City's the little wretched hive of scum and villainy, and you need to sort of go around there dealing with criminals and making deals and stuff, and then there's a big old mountain fortress you have to go and assault, and there's a whole load of massive scorpions all over the place and sandworms and things. Lots to do on there. I'd recommend going and having a look if you haven't had a look already. It's some new content, which is always nice. And yeah, just a new location, a new place to have a little wander around in, which is always nice. I mean,
actually, it looks pretty much like the one in the film, so they've done quite a good job.
Yeah. Is that a still from the film you've got on the screen there? Yeah, that's pretty much what it looks like, yeah. So they've done a pretty good job of recreating it there for all you Star Trek fans, but as gameplay it's good as well. I like it. So, and of course a whole load of little repeatable stuff's in there for Dilithium. Everyone needs to work out the best way to get their 8k a day Dilithium refinement done, you see.
Yeah.
Oh, there's lots of ways to do it in there now. You can then cash all that out for Zen, and then use the Zen to buy your missing bag slots and all the rest of it. Which is
I don't have missing bag slots.
No, you're some sort of lifetime Uber subscriber or something. Yeah, I've written PvP there. I was determined to fill in my 8k of Dilithium because I want to hurry up and get these bag slots unlocked. And I noticed that I'd had in my journal a whole load of missions from about 2-3 years ago, which were all the tutorial PvP stuff. They were go to this system and have a go in a fight for X Dilithium, and they'd all been sat there for 8 years because I just didn't touch PvP with a long stick usually, except Planetside 2, which is different. So I thought, all right, I'll go along and have a go. How hard can this be? I noticed it only says participate, not win. So, you know, I'll just turn up and get kicked about a bit, get my Dilithium, go away again. Yeah, I'm quite unprincipled and cheap like that, really. And it went about as well as you'd imagine. I turned up in this space zone. I really still don't quite know what was going on there, to be honest. You go to this planet, you join this war zone thing, and there's a whole load of Borg structures floating around in space, and you're supposed to be the first team to hack a load of node things by flying near them and using your multi-purpose deflector dish. All the time this is going on, you've got a whole load of KDF in there with you as well, and it's all free fire against each other type of thing. And obviously no teams, no coordination, no maximum size limits, no timers. Every so often it would just suddenly warp everyone back to the same respawn point.
Yeah, just to make sure you're not wandering off.
Presumably this thing, you've got such an amount of time to go and get all these nodes hacked or something, but mostly what happens is everyone turns up. Now, this is everyone turns up on the same spawn point. KDF and Federation all on the same spawn point within about 2k of each other when the match starts. Yeah, that's novel. I hadn't ever seen that before. PvP...
time to fight Zero.
Exactly, yeah, no, it does what it says on the tin. As soon as you come out of the little warp-in mini cutscene thing, you're off, and they're next to you with phasers, you know, it's mental. You'd have thought they'd have made them start at each end of the match or something. I have no idea what that was about. It's just instant, crazy furball. And, of course, I turned up in on my Federation character with the beam cruiser with all the engineering healing skills.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was a waste of time, that was, I tell you. To my defence and my credit, I was perhaps the ship that survived the most, the longest. But yeah, there was just a bunch of super over-specced DPS cannon boats with all the PvP crowd control science abilities on, and they just totally tore us apart. So I spent about 5, 10, 15 minutes just being farmed over and over on the same spawn point, and I thought, yeah, this is about as well as I remember. Remember, kids, PvP and gear don't mix. Never play a PvP game where there's equipment that you earn in PvE with purple rarities and stuff, because there's always some bugger who's spent way more time in it than you have. Yeah, so that went about as well as I'd imagine. I just dismissed the whole thing. I need to try some ground combat PvP, I suppose, just to see what that's like, but I imagine that'll be just as bad, really, because what happens is people who love PvP spend all their time PvPing, and they read the forums, they do their build craft and stuff, and so when amateurs like me wander in, oh, hello, I'm new, what's this all about, you know, you're just going to get absolutely stomped into the ground. And, you know, it takes a lot of time and effort, and you've got to go away and grind your ass off getting the best gear and the best sets in a game that isn't PvP predominantly anyway.
That sounds like
fun. All that cool stuff comes from the PvE game, usually. Oh, it's the usual nightmarish mix of PvE and PvP, and I don't like it. I probably won't be doing much more of it. I don't know, though. Perhaps it'll be a different kettle of fish. I might try it from my KDF character side, just to see if a massively glass cannon overspec DPS boat has much more fun in there or not. They seem to be doing it. I mean, it's just an absolute waste of time turning up in any kind of sort of repair-based cruiser for PvP in space in that game. I think it's just all DPS glass cannon boats with cloaking devices, or don't bother, really. Mind you, you know, let's not discount the fact that I do suck. So, you know, it might be quite good if you like that sort of thing. I'm desperately trying to find positives, but on the whole, I just didn't enjoy it and probably won't be doing it again. For the little amount of dilithium you get, if you just want to farm dilithium, don't do PvP, for God's sake. There's loads of other places in there. They've completely rejigged the, you know, the dilithium asteroid mining. Have you been there with the little triangular
mini game? I didn't do it the last
time.
Thing?
Okay, well, that's fair enough. That seems to have changed or been improved or something. I don't know what the deal is, but you can get about 1,500 dilithium every sort of day or so just doing that. And you just potter about looking for the rocks on the surface of the asteroid in your spacesuit with the giant Ferengi ship over the top of the searchlights and stuff. And you do your little triangle spinny mini game thing a couple of times, and that's one way to get it. I tell you, where's a good way of getting dilithium if you're really trying to get your quota for the day is the foundry.
Yes.
They've reworked how that all works. It used to be a case of there were a big list of missions which would basically go to the control panel next to the transporter in Earth space dock and press it for instant dilithium. it appears that they're now actually reviewing and vetting missions. Previously, they obviously hadn't bothered. The foundry, which actually the foundry seems to be taken out or offline or down at the moment, because obviously they need to rework it to include all the new Romulan stuff.
Also the Neverwinter stuff.
It's probably to do with Neverwinter as well. I imagine they use the same engine. They probably use the same sort of foundry systems. But it's impossible to create missions at the moment, but you can still play other people's missions that have already been made. And if they've been reviewed and designated as a spotlight mission, you know, someone from Cryptic's actually gone through and made sure it isn't just a go in, press a button, receive dilithium, you're then eligible for mission rewards. And also the first spotlight mission of those you do a day, I think it might even be only every 7 hours or every 4 hours or something, first one of those you do a day, you get a bonus dilithium. So if you just do one of the spotlight missions every time you play, you'll get, I think it's like 2,800 dilithium, which is quite a lot. So that all counts towards, you know, if you're working towards that 8k a day thing. Or you could just give them money, you know, that's fine. I tend to look at this as a little miniature mission of its own, really. So there's the fleet stuff going on there. I'm at Van Hemlock in there, if anyone wants to get in touch. I'm not sure if we're... it's not my guild, this is the thing. You see, I've joined this guild merely as a member rather than setting one up, so I don't know what the deal is about recruiting or whether you've got stringent examinations to pass to get in or anything.
Oh, what you do is you just Hit up Matt from Musketeers.
Ah, there we go.
And badger him constantly, and it'll be fine.
Fair enough. But yeah, if there's any interest there, put something in comments, and perhaps we can find a spot for you in one of our little five-man groups pottering through the Romulan stuff. I don't know how far the Romulan content goes all the way up. I know there's certainly content up to the up to level 10 or so, but perhaps...
Yeah, they'd probably forget it after that.
Well, saying that, they have redone the Klingons starter stuff, so that there's content all the way up as well now. There's a whole bunch of little mission chains in there, which I find myself accidentally doing them on my level 50 Klingon character sometimes, because I just take every mission and then work it all out when I get there. And some of that's quite underpowered for my Uber glass cannon level 50 boat. But that's fine. It's all ticks in the box. But yeah, so I'm definitely enjoying Star Trek Online at the moment. It's just a consistently good side game for pottering about for half an hour, you know, that kind of thing, which I... Typically, I don't bother soloing much in Planetside. I usually group for that. But, yeah, good stuff. So why don't you talk for a bit?
Okay, something momentous happened this week.
Yep.
A game was released, and I bought it on PC instead of buying it on the console.
Oh, you're a big PC person now, all
of a
sudden.
Yeah, I'm a PC gamer. Yeah. PC games are cool.
Yeah. Well, this is just your console's getting old, I suppose, isn't it? PC's in a better place now.
Also, more importantly, I've got a new PC and I quite like having the massively high resolution that it gives me.
Excellent.
So I got Grid 2 on PC.
Okay. It's your racing game, presumably second in the franchise. I don't really remember Grid much. I don't think I played it myself.
Well, considering last episode we discovered the reason why you suck at driving games is you don't realise that the triggers are analogue.
I have two speeds.
Yes. I loaded it up on Steam. I got to do for the very first time the sitting there thinking, but the game's on the disc. Why won't you let me play it? Until it ticked over to be released after having pre-downloaded it.
Oh, God. One of those.
Yeah, It seemed a little
cruel. That's a relic, isn't it? Pointless leftover.
Yeah, especially, you know, being out in America for the last couple of days. Digital day releases. Why not?
Yeah.
It looks gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's in a much higher resolution than it would be on Xbox or PS3.
You showed me the intro there. It does look very sharp.
Very sharp, very shiny. It's got such wonders as anti-aliasing so that the game doesn't look all jaggedy when you've got overhead power lines and stuff.
Yeah, particularly on high resolution displays and things.
Yeah. I'm playing it with my Xbox controller at the moment because I haven't got around to plugging in my steering wheel yet.
Oh, yeah, you got your big fancy steering wheel for.
Which, when I bought that, I was quite clever, you see. I bought one that worked on PC, Xbox, and PS3.
Almost as if you knew.
Yeah.
You knew one day that the 360 wouldn't be enough anymore.
I don't think it's going to work on the Xbox One, though, which is going to be really annoying.
Xbone. Yeah.
Actually, maybe that's something else that pushes me over towards PS4.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that that's not going to work on the Xbox One because existing controllers aren't going to work.
Certainly another pro or con to bear weigh into it all. Yeah.
Because on the Xbox, the one I've got is wireless, but for the others, it uses USB.
Ah, right.
So maybe it'll still work as USB on the Xbox One. Yeah, Grid 2 it's gorgeous. It drives well. It's on the arcadey side of things.
Oh, right.
It's certainly not their F1 game on full realism type difficulty.
Okay.
But it's really, really good and fun and enjoyable, and it does encourage you to be sideways a lot of the time.
Excellent. What's the nearest comparison to existing racing games that people may also be aware of?
Grid.
It's just more of the same, but...
Yeah, it's Codemasters, since they went to be fully a racing studio, have... games which have different needs. You've got Grid, which is your track-based racing.
Mm-hmm.
You've got F1, which is the F1 one.
High on the simulation end, I suppose.
You've got Dirt, which is your rallying.
Yep.
And you've probably got another one I can't remember off the top of my head. But so this is your track-based... organized racing type game where
so no
real
super
world
jumps,
cars.
no police to escape from. No. It's all very very straightforward.
Yeah, X
racing.
Number of laps, come in first. Mm-hmm. Try not to crash.
Yeah,
too much.
Excellent.
It's got the usual livery designer and stuff, so you can customize your cars and whatnot. And the multiplayer will probably be really good because the Codemasters racing games are some of the only games where I actually bothered with the online multiplayer anymore.
Okay.
Because they actually do have a really nice drop in, and the sort of people you get on a racing game tend to be an awful lot nicer than the sort of person you get on, say, a shooter. they're a lot more inclusive and friendly and don't mind so much as you get up to speed.
Oh, right.
Unless you're playing Gran Turismo when they're all just dicks.
There we go. Need to be a caveat, yeah.
No, really, that game, for some reason, just attracted really, really horrible people.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Oh, how old.
Yeah, and it's not a PS3 thing, because the other games on the PS3 are fine. So, yeah, don't know why.
Yeah,
fair enough. Yeah, I heartily recommend it if you like driving games.
Excellent.
And it's probably okay on the consoles as well.
Right. Good stuff. I'm going to talk about The Saboteur. I'm back on the Xbox now, because Xboxes are cool or something. No, I'm just working through your second-hand game catalogue, really. So I picked up The Saboteur quite a while ago, borrowed it off of yourself. I like it. It's fantastic. If I had to sum it up in one sentence, it's basically Assassin's Creed 2 during Nazi-occupied Paris in the Second World War.
With a
so
lot more black
similar.
And white.
Oh, that's really good. I remember you talking about it when you covered it a while back, and that is such a really effective and clever, quite arty technique, really. You got this whole city of, and it's a weird map as well. I just don't think it's possible to drive from Le Havre to the German border in like 3 minutes.
Yeah, it is.
It's mostly Paris, but in very close into the suburbs of Paris are Le Havre, the German border, the Mediterranean. It's just, you know, you got a bit of everything. It's like a pastiche of France.
Weirdest France ever.
Weirdest France ever.
Actually, it's a much better France, because France is a lot bigger than you think.
France is unnecessarily large.
If you've ever driven across France, it's really, really annoying.
But this is a convenient pocket-sized France with a bit of everything all tucked around the outskirts of central Paris. And all the landmarks are there. I don't know if the street maps are at all familiar or reminiscent of the real thing. I only drove in Paris once and I had my eyes shut the whole time and was screaming. So, but the city's divided up into districts and it's occupied by the Nazis. There's a big old bit of plot at the start that explains who you are. You're Sean Devlin, a very, very forthright Irishman who has a big old grudge, and you get to see why he's got a grudge against the Nazis and so on. And he gets caught up in the French Paris resistance, and your main meat and potatoes of the job is to work your way around the city, liberating through a series of missions different parts of the city. And the whole thing is really cleverly done, because initially when the Nazis are occupying Paris, it's all done in black and white with a few really dark overcast skies and zeppelins going over and stuff, and the whole thing's like a film noir monochrome thing with the occasional splashes of colour here and there. And then once you do the appropriate mission to liberate a particular district of Paris, this big wash of colour goes out, and suddenly the whole thing's done in quite a glorious, rustic style, full of colour, and all the people are happier and everything. It gives you a real sense of achievement, wanting to sort of move on and actually crack on and liberate the city. I'm guessing, obviously, the chap can't liberate the entire city of Paris himself. That would take an army and probably a D-Day landing and something. But so there's often still Nazis wandering around the bits you've done, but it's like the typical police alert stars are a lot easier to shake off, and there's friendly people wanting to help you and stuff. So it's fantastic. It's a sort of part mission-based story, and it's quite a good story as well, quite a sort of full of derring do and dashing boys' own adventure.
Do you know
and stuff.
The best thing about the story? It's based on a real person.
Based on a real bloke. Fantastic.
Yes, William Grover Williams.
Okay.
Actually, there was quite a few Grand Prix drivers in World War II who went off to France and became spies.
I suppose because they're all like adventurous globetrotter types already. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I do wonder. I'm going to have to go and find a biography.
You've got a book about
the real guy, have you? Because I want to read that after I finish playing through it. Because
the game's not 100% accurate. Yes, I would say that. Yes. Like, it's only sort of based on the idea of Formula 1.
But it is fantastic. You're sort of basically scampering around the rooftops, Assassin's Creed style, planting dynamite on watchtowers and stuff, trying to knock them out. You can buy little maps from your resistance quartermaster stores, and it shows all the dots where you need to go and put your bombs and stuff, and that's all quite good. There's a fairly competent driving element to it all. You do have to actually win a race early on during part of the prologue story, which sort of explains why he's so bitter and why he's fighting the Germans and everything. And that took me a few goes. It's like, oh, right, okay, restart. You know, it's one of those, you must win this race to carry on. So, oh God, I thought I was going to be stuck behind a racing game wall. I'm not too fond of the racing itself. Presumably there are other races in there I haven't got to yet as well. But just driving the cars around the city and stuff, they're all sort of, you know, classic 1940s cars as well. It's all very stylish. It does feel quite stylish. You
know? I can't remember if you have a radio in your car?
Yes, you do. Yes. Yeah, you do. Yeah. And does this clever
thing. I probably moaned about that last time.
Yeah, yeah. When was Nina Simone recording? I can't remember because some of that appears on the radio.
Yeah, some of the music's all
hasn't
early
she,
too.
She hasn't been born yet. I don't know, but yeah, and that's quite clever and stylishly done. You get in, and it's quite tinny, and then it sort of builds up to the full orchestra thing if you stay in the car long enough. Yeah, it's quite good. I like it. Very stylish. And then of course, if you get bored of the Assassin's Creed rooftops thing, there's quite a lot of countryside you can leave the city and go and liberate as well, train bridges and stuff. Quite an interesting perks system. You have to carry out a number of different sorts of challenge to unlock improved abilities as you go through. I still can't work out how to blow up train bridges yet either. They seem quite solid, and I wonder if I'm missing something.
There's missions that you have to do it.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, maybe there's just parts, features I haven't unlocked. Because I'm really sort of, you know, when you're enjoying one of these games so much that you just don't want to push the story on because you're quite happy pottering around just blowing stuff up.
Yeah, we'll get onto that when I get to one of my games.
So, yeah. And just looking at the number of dots that appear to be on the map, it's that same sort of draw that I had with Just Cause 2, where I wanted to 100% find absolutely everything because I was just enjoying myself running around in there so much. It's good fun. I like it. So I'm probably not going to give that back for quite some time because I've got so many things to blow up.
That's okay. I'm a PC
and
gamer.
I'm really getting into the story of it all as well. It's quite good. There's the English sexy super spy who's an old flame, and there's the sister of your best mate, who's the plucky hometown Italian girl there, who's and there's a priest who wants you to go off on these massive rampages, and then there's the obligatory French Foreign Legion colonel you have to bust out of prison and stuff, and he becomes another contact. It's a real good ripping yarn of a game. I like it a lot.
The only complaint I have is the main accent.
Yes. Yeah, I believe that's Robert Aitken Downes doing a quite mediocre Irish accent that slips an awful lot of the time. But I just wondered, are there no actual Irish voice actors in the industry? Does it have to be Robert Aitken Downes again? I suppose it beats Nolan North.
You would have thought he would have been able to do Irish then.
It's reasonably consistent most of the way through, but yeah, it's I suppose it depends if you take it in the spirit of the Saints Row Mockney accent there. Yeah. If you just roll with it, it's fine. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, so that's occupying a lot of my non-MMO time at the moment. I recommend it heartily.
It's a good game. It's very cheap.
So Pandemic, that. What else did they make? Because I've seen
they make loads of stuff. Let me just keep you...
Was this a case of... Because I don't really remember much, but was this a case of the studio releasing a fantastic game that no one bought and then immediately going bankrupt?
Well, it wasn't considered to be a fantastic
Pandemic
game,
Studios, defunct video game developer.
Yeah, Cyberstar killed them.
It killed them. Oh, that's a real shame. It's a solid game. I like it a lot. You say some people didn't like it? I don't know.
Yeah, no, it didn't go down very well at all. People just didn't like it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what else I'd seen that they'd done, but...
They did Dark Reign 2, Clone Wars Full Spectrum Warrior, Destroy Star Wars Battlefront, Mercenaries. Oh, Mercenaries was brilliant.
Yeah, that's a real shame. Still, I suppose I'm part of the problem. I should have gone out and bought it on day one.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Lord of the Rings Conquest, which was...
Well, I recommend it if you can find it, probably pre-owned at this stage, if you can find it in your local game shop or whatever, Amazon, usual places, all that. I recommend it.
It'll be very cheap.
Basically, if you liked Assassin's Creed, you'll love this. It's very similar, but with a different setting,
Yeah, and a lot more...
More driving.
Yes, and it's 15 quid still.
Wow. Well, worth it, I'd say.
Yeah.
Right, so that's me. Why don't you talk about something...
Okay, yes. Well, see, since I've discovered that PC gaming's brilliant, like I've been saying all along, because I don't know why...
You're a strong proponent of PC gaming.
Yeah, all along.
You haven't just bought a PC again, haven't you?
Yeah, I know. I'm being very annoying to everyone I know about it. I went through on Steam and took advantage of the fact that an awful lot of games are very cheap on Steam.
Uh-huh.
And I grabbed what I consider to be some of the top games of the last couple of years, which I would like to play again.
Okie dokie.
So one of them I grabbed was Saints Row 3.
Saints Row 3, is it?
Because
this is quite fresh in my mind because I only recently borrowed it off. No, I only recently bought it because you didn't have it to lend. So I, as far as I'm concerned, that's a new game.
Yeah, I've been playing it on Xbox. On PC instead of Xbox.
Okay.
I completed it on Xbox before.
Oh, mine was on 360. So yeah. How's it shape up on the PC?
It looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
Much higher res. I'm a lot better at getting headshots.
Yeah.
And an awful lot of fights, I'm just going in with a pistol and just headshotting them all in a line as I go across.
But you're much worse at driving, I noticed.
Okay, I was a lot worse than driving using the keyboard. And when I picked up the controller, it worked a lot better.
Yeah, that was just shocking how different your driving is with a keyboard and mouse versus an Xbox controller.
It's experience.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's one of the good things, of course, I can use the Xbox controller.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Yeah, it's... Oh, it's just a brilliant game, isn't it?
I just do like a good city sandbox. Yeah. To just have as a massive adventure playground.
Sandbox games are the sort of games I like the most.
Assassin's Creed's are fairly good at it.
And, yeah, just... I'm not going on, like you say, not moving the plot along because I'm just having too much fun getting a load of cash, buying everything and skilling up.
Yeah, mind you, I'm wondering if I'm stuck in Saboteur with trying to work out how to do some things because it just hasn't introduced them along the story
quite possibly.
Yet. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was getting that on stage where it was introducing mechanics, which I already knew about later on in my
maxed
playthrough.
Out the accompanying perk, yeah.
Yeah. But, no, it's just a fantastic romp.
Excellent.
And, well, any game where it starts off with it all going wrong, you end up skydiving at one point and you...
That opening sequence is bonkers.
You end up going through the front of a plane all the way through, kill the bad guy out the back.
That was amazing.
Get back to the girl to pick her up again before you all hit the ground, because you've got the only parachute.
I know, it's like James Bond has nothing on this gangster hoodlum, yeah.
One thing I've noticed with all of these Steam games, though, is the first 5 minutes of any game is it saying all the things that have unlocked because you bought the collector's edition and it's got, you know, every single extra vehicle.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, and annoyingly, it gave me the VTOL plane straight off
well. That totally ruined it from the start. Yeah. It's so useful. Yeah, near the end game, once you've unlocked it through story progression and you've finished more or less everything else, it's a fantastic thing to have around. But yeah, being given that straight away, no.
Yeah, it really does.
Are you resisting using it? Or?
I took it out and had a bit of a mayhem, but I'm not using it for plot stuff.
Yeah, it's just not fair on the enemy.
No.
Well, that's what I worry. All these games. I mean, the last couple of games I got, there's Dishonored. There was a code I could type in for a whole bunch of free stuff. And I just thought, no, I don't need any of this stuff. I don't know what context any of this stuff is even useful in. The game has been designed, presumably, not to have this free hoard of stuff right at the start. It introduces things gradually, the power curve and all that. You know, and Saboteur was bitching at me about a typing code from some extra DLC that I didn't have because I'd borrowed off you. You've probably already used it.
Yeah.
But and I just think, yeah, go away, leave me alone. And is this free-to-play creeping into our normal games?
No, that's the ability to try and monetize second-hand sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, day one DLC. But, I mean, a lot of this stuff that, if you used it, would probably just ruin the game experience anyway.
Or change it.
Well,
from my experience, most of the gear you get is crap, and all it is usually is extra missions that matter, and then usually they're rubbish as well.
They're not integrated with the story particularly well. Mind you, I suppose at least it's better than the opposite, which is Assassin's Creed 2, which has, was it, two whole chapters missing from the main story if you don't type in your day one DLC? You just get skipped past the bonfire of the vanities and all that stuff. And presumably that was written into the main storyline from the word go, so who knows what would have gone on in there. I don't care.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things is I've got all the extra DLC as well, haven't I? I've got the Saints Row space and stuff.
The Gangsters in Space is fantastic. The Trouble with Clones one's not that great. That's a bit boring. I can't remember what the other one was. But
I did the Gangsters in Space one on the Xbox.
Gangsters in Space is fantastic. That, if you get free DLC, do play through that one. But it's probably not worth paying for, I wouldn't have thought. It's a few extra missions and a few extra gizmos that you get to keep at the end of it all. But yeah.
Still, it's still an excellent game.
Yeah.
So, your turn.
I've written Malifaux there. So this is probably more one for you than me, but you had some typical Amazon delivery muck-up or something.
It wasn't an Amazon delivery muck-up this time.
Somebody sent you two of them.
Who I won't mention.
Yeah, there's a whole box of miniatures for, are they Weird Miniatures, is the company, for a game called Malifaux, which I don't know anything about. I don't know how to play. I've never even seen a rule book. But you give me a little box of miniatures with called crews? There's a master and a crew.
You've seen a rule book now.
Okay, I've seen a rule book. Fantastic. It's a tabletop miniatures tactical combat game.
Small scale.
It looks to be a lot less hectic than a Warhammer 40k game. And I mean, the crew that's in the box I got only consists of six models anyway.
Yeah.
So that looks good. They got the little cards with some stats on, which I don't know what any of those mean. But this is all preparation for some Malifaux that we're going to be playing at some point.
Yeah, we are.
Once we learn how to play it.
I know how to play it.
Possibly going to be doing something for the show, some video
We will be doing something for the show. It's one of the harder video ones I've got planned.
All right, well.
And I still need to get the damn camera delivered.
There'll be some sort of lab session, audio or video, who knows. But to begin with, I've had to build the damn thing. So the Ten Thunders. Ten Thunders is the faction, and they're like a sort of martial arts, karate, sort of ninja type of outfit. Yeah. And they've got the sort of oriental sorcery angle going on as well. And these models, I will give them their credit, the models are fantastically detailed. They're very good models if you're into collecting toy soldiers and painting them. These are some good ones to have. I mean, even if you're not even going to play the game, they're still very fine craftsmanship. Trouble is, they're so fine and delicate and fiddly, and they're just covered in sticky outy swords and spears and things that are really going to snap off the first time I even airbrush them, or point an aerosol at them, let alone try and actually put in a box to bring to a game. I mostly spent the week sticking bits of plastic together and inadvertently getting high off of solvent abuse,
one of the perks of the hobby.
Yeah, got the polystyrene cement on the go there. And I've managed to undercoat them, and I'm just absolutely terrified of starting to paint them, because I've been painting some of your spare miniatures for a while, mostly Warhammer 40k orcs, which are generally of a much less detailed and more rugged construction, yeah. So you can generally be a bit more slapdash with them.
Well, one thing's about the Malifaux stuff, that the quality of the models is way above the sort of detail you get on a 40k miniature.
On the Games Workshop stuff, yeah, definitely. I think I may already have ruined them by putting a bit too much undercoat on them with the spray there. But I shall be having a go at painting those in the weeks ahead. But yeah, it's a bit nerve-wracking looking at them. I don't want to ruin them all with my slapdash brushwork that normally is good enough only for orcs.
Yeah.
But so that's been keeping me busy. I'm looking forward to playing, actually, just sort of briefly looking over the little cards that come with each miniature and all the stats and the abilities and stuff. It seems like quite an interesting sort of game based on cards rather than dice.
Yes, it uses cards and ways of manipulating results in your favour from your hand.
Because that's one of the reasons I play Orcs in 40k, is because it's such a dice-random game that, at least with a very large number of dice, you can sort of normalise the curve a bit. So when you're having 40 orcs all shooting at the enemy, you just get this big double cupped palm of dice and throw them everywhere. You need fives or higher, but there's a lot of dice there, and some of them are going to be five or more. Makes it a bit more predictable, oddly enough, which is not what you'd expect from orcs. So why don't you talk about a thing?
I'm going to talk about another game I played.
Okay.
Which is, again, going on the I'm going to download every game I really enjoyed from the last couple of years.
You're catching up on the PC gaming scene.
Yeah. I downloaded Just Cause 2.
Just Cause 2?
Because it's awesome. And yeah. I thought I needed a bit of float around and stick stuff with a grappling hook
and parachute. Oh yeah, off we go. I spent a huge amount of time playing the 360 version of that and enjoyed it immensely. Again, another just massively interesting sandbox to run around in with a bit of minimal plot going on, but mostly leaving you to your own devices to be awesome.
One thing I've realised is I mainly play sandboxes and driving games.
Mm.
I enjoy those more than anything else.
Ideally, sandboxes with driving in.
Oh, most sandboxes have driving in.
Yeah. There's something that's missing from Assassin's Creed, really.
You get the old horse.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, Just Cause is just fantastic. The sheer blatantly ripping off of Bond and things it does. there's that mission later on, which is that bit from GoldenEye.
Oh, yeah. There's some fantastic set pieces in there. They're quite fun to watch, let alone take part in, yeah. It's very cinematic. I like it.
Yeah, it's just one of those
sandbox with story. I
hope that they get to make another one.
I'm guessing that was a success, but that generally doesn't mean anything in this crazy industry.
The industry's stupid.
Yeah, they tend to just shut people down anyway. You know, only sold 3 million, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
how can you not make money selling that much of anything?
I played the first one, mm-hmm. which was good. It came out at the time where it was out on PS2 and Xbox 360.
Yeah, I vaguely remember playing it myself, actually. But it was a bit more linear and there wasn't nearly as much to do sandbox-wise. There was a bit more in the way of just follow missions from A to B. And there was a few go and collect the thingies, but nothing nearly as off the beaten track as what Just Cause 2 turned into.
Yeah, which they finally realised exactly what you could do.
Yeah,
it doesn't look like Avalanche are making the third.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I don't know. Where would you go next for that, though? I mean, you know, already...
More of the same.
More of the same. That wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, no.
It found something
Just Cause
works.
3, why not, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just fun. That's one of the things that... it's the sort of game I like, just... You can ignore the plot and just have fun in.
It's there when you want it, but the basic nuts and bolts of day-to-day gameplay are immense fun. And if you've got that, then you can't really go wrong. Yeah, having a big voiced story with cutscenes and stuff is nice, but just being able to run off into the French countryside with a rucksack full of dynamite, you know, and I can while away many a happy afternoon.
It's the freedom I
always, in the game.
It's the freedom I always wanted from MMOs but never quite got.
Yeah, it's like these sandbox sort of third-person story shooters tend to occupy what MMOs should be, yeah. Whereas MMOs become sort of more and more like single-player story campaign games these days. It's just odd crossovers, and the presence or otherwise of large numbers of other players in your world, it almost becomes an optional and somewhat negligible thing, really. It's odd seeing the convergence going on there.
Now I'm going to have to play Red Faction Guerrilla next, aren't I?
I liked it.
Yeah, because...
Although it was insanely difficult. I think out of any game I've ever played, that is one that you do want to just swallow your pride and set it to easy difficulty.
I didn't find it that
difficult. You completed it, have you?
Yeah.
Oh, bloody hell. Maybe it's just me then. Maybe I'm just bad at games and should feel bad.
Don't forget that I'm awesome. Anyway, you talk.
I've written Pandemic Heroic Win there. We had a board game weekend.
We played Pandemic.
Bank holiday, more board games. We got cracked out Pandemic, and they all said, what difficulty should we do? And there was a sort of, you know, non-committal kind of mumbling. So I said, right, we're going to do Heroic difficulty. This is the Pandemic. Basically, what that does is, it's normal Pandemic, but you have 6 Epidemic cards instead of the 4 for easy mode and 5 for a normal game. So basically every sort of third or fourth time around the table, up pops an epidemic and the board goes mental. But I was so impressed with how well everyone pulled together. Everyone was using their roles correctly. That we made an aggressive attack. I think we cured one of the diseases.
We cured blue early on.
Yeah.
And then eradicated it, which was a massive help.
Yeah, because there was no extra diseases. Basically, a quarter of the infection cards have then become irrelevant if you can eradicate it. And we got it done. It was touch and go. It was very exciting. You wouldn't think a cooperative game where there's no combat of any sort it would be that tense and interesting. But I enjoyed it immensely, and we won. We actually did it. It was fantastic. So next time you have a large outbreak of a major life-threatening disease, do get in touch, because
we're experts.
We've proven through many simulations that we can do it.
Yeah,
we know about diseases.
Except for that time we got killed on the first turn.
That was probably everyone's got a star somewhere in epidemiology or whatever. So that's really all I've got to say, really.
I'm going to mention Kerbal Space Program.
Oh, go on then. Yes.
Because I've been playing a bit more Kerbal Space Program. They added some new stuff.
Yeah.
They've added wheels so you can make rovers and stuff. And part of this is a seat for a rover.
Ah, right.
And I've taken to attaching one to the outside of the capsule.
Yeah.
And then putting poor Jebediah on it for launch.
Jebediah.
He seems to like it.
He looks so happy.
He did. Yeah.
He didn't realise you'd forgotten to detach the booster stage.
No, the... That particular launch I did for you earlier was not a resounding success. I made 2 fundamental errors.
Yes.
First one was I put the separator on the wrong side of half of the equipment, so it was too heavy to actually land safely on the parachute.
Oh, come on, man. It's not rocket science.
And the other mistake I made was I made it very quickly just to show you. And when I was putting the solid boosters, which separate, on the rocket, I didn't notice I put the separators on the mist with the solid boosters so that they were actually physically attached. Mm. So halfway through the launch, when it came to eject the solid
bunch
boosters,
of widgets just...
a bunch of bits of metal flew off the side and the solid boosters
The explosive
stayed.
Bolts exploded correctly, but the boosters weren't attached to those. They were just bolted to the main fuselage. Yeah.
I ejected the explosive bolts.
The bolts flew away magnificently. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and then they
Poor
did
Jebediah.
Not achieve orbit and came into re-entry.
It's such a cruelty simulator, that Kerbal Space Program. You can see their little faces in the bottom corner and everything, and they just don't look like they're enjoying it at all, to be honest.
There's a bit of accuracy they don't have, which is the fact that when I did come in, they've now got the plasma effect for going through the atmosphere.
Ah, yeah.
And, he did look like he was burning in hell.
Yeah, which segues quite neatly into what I learnt this week, which was why they put astronauts on the inside of the rocket for re-entry.
Yes.
What did you learn this week?
I learned this week that apparently if you're going to be a gangster, just go with the flow.
Absolutely. I don't even know what that means. No. Do your spiel.
You can catch us at howtomurdertime.com. You can also catch me out moving on, where this week we're watching Starman or something like that.
Starman? Oh, blimey. I don't even remember if I liked that or not. I know I've seen it.
I don't think I do like it. But,
well, we're going to find out within the week.
Yeah, I need to watch that tonight without fail.
Do your homework, yeah. Man.
I haven't listened to last week's show either because I wasn't on it. Apparently it was one of their best shows ever.
Oh, they've shuffled you out for a better offer, have they?
Well, no, I was off playing Pandemic at the time.
Oh, you're right.
So I told them to go on without me because there's four of us and we can get away with having one person.
Yes, I missed Pathfinder at a very critical juncture as well. I think we may be coming across the final boss. And I died and everything. It was amazing.
Oh, excellent. Are you still alive? Oh, could you pass me that book behind you?
Hang on.
The white book behind
you.
You'll
have to talk then while I'm turned around.
Yes. Turning around isn't that hard. Right. Last week I mentioned the book.
I've now turned back.
And I've had a request for some actual information about what the book was.
Are we doing book reviews now?
No, it's the book about that I mentioned about the Microsoft and Sony developing the consoles and the fight over the processor.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
And the book is The Race for a New Game Machine, Creating the Chips the Size of the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 by David Shippey and Mickey Phipps.
Okay. Have we got an ISBN number?
yes, it's got two, actually. What's the difference between 10 and 13?
3.
Well,
is that
10
a trick question?
There's ISB 10 and ISB 13. I don't know what the difference is.
Right. Maybe it's like IP4 and IPv6. Maybe they've run out of ISBN numbers.
I do know that somebody will definitely know who's listening, so...
Answers on a postcard. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.